Hi, this is Joseph Geierman of DoorBlog, and you're listening to the Georgia Politics Podcast. We're here shortly after it's a couple of days after the 2008 presidential election, and we're here to talk about Georgia politics. We've got a pretty good panel today, and we'll start off with Grift Drift. Grift?
This is James from Drifting Through the Grift.
This is Jason from JasonPie.com.
This is Grayson from mostlymedia.wordpress.com.
And this is Chris Sutman from ChrisSutman.com and ChrisIsHardcore.com and PeachPundit and many other places around the internet.
Hardcore.
Yeah, very hardcore.
The lone candidate on the panel.
Well, it was actually, I think that what surprised me the most about this race was how it really didn't look like that much changed in Georgia overall compared to, maybe what we were expecting with all the early voting, and with Bob Barr being on the ticket, and with just like all of this excitement about the race. I mean, when you look at it, there were more voters, but Barack Obama still didn't get as many votes as George Bush did in 2004, and
McCain got 100,000
more. So what happened? What's going on in Georgia? Jason, you actually worked for the Barr campaign, right?
The Barr, I can only speak from the Barr campaign's perspective because I didn't really pay much attention to what was going on in the Obama campaigns and the McCain campaign, other than the fact that the McCain campaign was the worst campaign I've ever seen, from a major party. But as far as Barr goes, I mean, Palin killed us. I mean, it really undercut a lot of our support, and we were polling at, in some states, as high as 6 and 8%, 10% in Nevada and 11% in New Hampshire at one point, but Palin really excited the base. That's what killed us. I mean, as far as voter turnout goes, I mean, I actually looked at a study yesterday that said that voter turnout was only a half a percent to a percent higher than 2004, so it seems that people were kind of they were more apathetic this year than before. So, I mean, I think that kind of resonated in the Republican base considering who their candidate was as well. I mean, he's a decent man, but, I mean, he's done so much to betray the Republican base that, they were skeptical of him to begin with. So.
Although, I think I want to just add about how Republicans feel about McCain is he did really well in a lot of the areas that Bush did well in the south part of the state. And one thing that I think McCain kind of has going for him down there that maybe some other Republicans wouldn't have had is a lot of these voters, although they've been conservative their entire life, are newer Republicans. And McCain's background of the Army service certainly resonates with them, and going against the party when they're not certainly completely sold on that party yet either, I think makes him a good candidate to hold some of the southern states like Georgia that he held, and he needed to get big margins down there, and he got them. And if you look at the drop off that Saxby had in a lot of those places where people were going in, and all you heard about before the election was all these people are going to go in for Obama and walk out, not vote in the Senate race. You look at some of these southern counties, and Martin's getting more votes than Obama in heavily Republican counties, and Saxby is 500 or 600 votes short of where McCain was. So I think, in a lot of sense, McCain is a good candidate for those type of kind of South Georgia, newer Republicans that haven't been in the fold for a long time. And Griff probably knows more about that than I do, since he's from there.
Yes, I am. And the thing is in politics, you got to win you've got to make the gimmies, and then you got to win the long putts. And the problem with the McCain campaign and possibly the Barr campaign to a lesser degree is they weren't winning the gimmies even here in Georgia. Now, the funny thing is Joseph, you mentioned that it's disappointing. But if you look at the numbers compared to just 2 years ago, the base of the Democratic Party in Georgia 2 years ago was right around 40%. Obama did get 46% in this, and that pretty much matched Jim Martin exactly on the nose, and they're starting for 46%. And one of the sins of the Democratic Party has been that they want to get everything in one bite, and they haven't learned to run incremental politics like the Republicans have done so successfully over the last 20 years. And I think the Democrats have to take away from this that they are starting at 46% from 2010 And that's a hell of a lot easier to get to 50 than it was when they were getting 37 and 38%.
What happened in the Georgia legislature? Because I don't think a whole lot changed at all, right?
Nothing changed.
Republicans got a net. They picked up two seats or kept two seats. Or they lost two seats.
They lost two.
Lost two seats. Yeah.
Thunder lost.
Excuse me, yeah. Lost two seats. Yeah, Thunder lost. Who else lost? John Hurd lost.
Yeah.
They lost House District 95, which was a gimme for the Democrats anyway.
I think that we're not going to see a lot of change in the legislature until 2010 when we have a governor's race again. I mean, one of the odd things about Georgia is we have the governor's race sort of in the Winter Olympics year of politics instead of the Summer Olympics year. And I have a feeling that a lot of people, probably had a lot of first-time voters this election, and a lot of people went in there and maybe voted the top of the ticket, maybe the first two in the ticket, and then the down races when we got down to the
the
legislative races, like Chris's race, maybe, they skipped out before that happened. So we pretty much saw the status quo in the legislature this time.
Do you think it hurts DuBois Porter at all? DuBois Porter?
Don't get me started on DuBois Porter. Oh, wait, I'm channeling Decatur guy all of a sudden.
I think one interesting thing about the legislative races, and I've got a couple of theories on how and why this happened, is you look at the seats that flipped, and those seats, with two exceptions, and even those two exceptions should be asterisks, but you're talking about areas of the state where there have been massive demographic changes underlying those things. So you talk about John Hurd's seat in Lawrenceville, which Lee Thompson won, and that seat went from being a seat that, Mark Taylor was getting 37% in to Barack Obama's getting 55% in, and he basically gets 53%. So he hangs in there.
Well, Gwinnett County's changing before our eyes.
Yeah, and you had a bunch of other seats in Gwinnett County that nobody even spent any money on, where they just happen to have candidates, and those guys are getting 44, 46, 47, and you can kind of see the roadmap for future gains later. But then you had the Mumford District, which was a district that was represented by a Republican incumbent that the Democrat got 62% in, and that's a district that I know that a lot of people in the party have been following for a long time. And then you look at Charles Jenkins and Jeanette Jameson, and Charles Jenkins is a great guy, but he represents a district that John Kerry got 27% in, and it looks like Barack Obama probably got about 25% in, and you just don't win those districts forever if you're in the other party. And then Jeanette Jameson had some issues and also comes from a district where the top of the ticket's getting in the low to mid 30s, and it's tough to win those. You look at Pat Dooley, who beat Thunder Tumlin in Marietta, and you look at Bubba Epps, who beat Alan Freeman, or I guess that race is theoretically still going to be recounted, but I don't see how
it's Bubber, not Bubba.
Well, it's spelled Bubber, but apparently he says it's pronounced Bubba, from what I understand.
Those South Georgia folks.
Yeah, but you look at those, even those two seats. One thing I think that distinguishes those seats is that they both have local newspapers. They both have local daily papers that cover local politics. And one thing I think about the race that I was in, and this is not like a sore loser thing or anything like that, but some of the communication, I thought that we did a good job of backing up and standing up to what we said about stuff in the race. But I think some of the stuff on the other side would not fly in a congressional race or something like that, where there's actually coverage, and we just, we're lucky to get one story out of the Insider over a 3-month period.
Well, and the AJC did no local endorsements.
Yeah, no endorsements, no covering it. I mean, you got a little bit out of Creative Loafing online. Yeah, we got the Crier, and actually, I did pretty well in the parts of the district that read the Crier.
Shocking,
but and if you took out the two precincts, I think if you took out the two precincts that don't read the Crier, that don't get it delivered in the yard or anything like that, if it wasn't for those two precincts, I think I actually would have been pretty close to 50%, which, But then we've got this DeKalb neighbor paper that just does these awful, here's the three things that both candidates want to do, and it's like I'm talking to the guy that called me to write the story, and I'm like, there's this whole race that's actually going on, that's, I'm saying this, she's saying this, there's this back and forth. Don't you have any interest in actually covering that? And it's like, well, we'll think about it, but can you just tell me your top three priorities if you get elected? It's kind of like, what does that serve anybody? And the other thing I want to say, I'll finish talking about the legislature really quick, but you look at where seats flipped, and Pat Dooley's district, The 45-day advance voting location for Cobb County up on Whitlock is in Pat Dooley's district. John Hurd's district's downtown Lawrenceville, which is where the 45-day advance voting for Gwinnett County is located. And with the House District 95, you've got Conyers and Covington, which is where are both kind of in the district, which is where the 45-day voting. And I think all Democrats that had their races disproportionately affected by early voting did well, and those districts were there. And then in a lot of other districts, from where Joseph and I live up in North DeKalb, it's a 40-minute ride down to Memorial Drive and 285 if you want to go, and then you have to stand in line for an additional 3 or 4 hours. So
what you're saying is Karen Handel is picking the Democrats she wants to win.
I think Democrats just left a lot on the table this year. I think there's so many other seats they could have ran a competitive race in.
Steve Davis comes to mind. I think we could beat Steve Davis if we had a candidate this year.
Oh, this is going
to
be good.
I'm looking to see his. I'm interested to see how his precinct's voted.
I'm not gonna
go to bat for Steve. I'm simply saying that. I know it was 50-50 during the primary, the presidential primary. I'm interested to see how it was during the presidential race.
Well, if you just look at Henry overall, kind of more of a 50-50
anything
county.
Anything from Jonesboro Road up, right, which is like middle of Henry County up, is tilting to the Democrats.
And so, then the Bill Hembree's district in Douglasville is another one that's
the
probably...
The Libertarians like him a lot, so the Libertarians out there, they really like him.
So, Chris, if everything north of that line is starting to trend Democrat, why haven't the Democrats in Georgia done a better job at running in these districts? I mean, I think we've talked about this to death, but the race against Mike Jacobs, who the Democrats tried to put up, was a joke, and there were a lot of other places I think that just didn't even have a Democratic contender at all. And
70-something% of the districts.
Well, that's the perennial problem in Georgia, is the Democrats are unable to run candidates that seem to catch people's attention. And maybe this will change this year. Maybe that cycle will begin to change. And that I have heard several people who have expressed interest as Democrats stepping forward in 2010 to possibly, take the stage, take the leadership. They know has been the Georgia Democratic Party has been sort of very thirsty for, and hopefully they will, take out of this whole 08 race some incentive and some leadership and some, get up off your ass and start running some decent candidates now.
Well, one thing, there's going to be a lot of Democrats who lose, and I think that sometimes maybe that's what happens. Like, someone loses and they said, I'm not going to run again. But it's like seeing the name on the ballot over and over again that finally the person is like, oh, I recognize that name. I'm going to vote for that person. Because I think, in a lot of cases, that's why these incumbents just keep getting reelected again and again.
Well,
also,
I ran into Pat Dooley during qualifying back in April when people are signing up to run. And to be perfectly honest with you, and I say that's a district, there was a big trend going on there too, a demographic trend too. And I remember seeing Pat and thinking oh, good for Pat, she's putting her name on the ballot, but I that's going to be a tough race. And she won. So even one of the candidates that I think a lot of people thought like, oh, well, she's doing it, good for her, but it's going to be a tough race. She won, so that's good on that hand. But then on the other hand, I think it's tough. I think it's tough for people to look at like a race like mine, where we did a lot of things right. We, kind of uncovered some problems with the incumbent that hadn't been found before. We communicated with the district about issues that she's supported that are not popular in the district, and you still come up short. And somebody else thinks like, well, why should I challenge someone if I just wait around? I'll still be alive 10 years from now. I'll just wait around until there's an open district that I can run in. And
well, but the problem with the Democratic Party of Georgia is there are open districts and no one's running.
Yeah.
Let's get down to brass tacks here.
It's a failure of leadership.
You got districts where, you totally got screwed down in Camilla.
Yes.
With Richard Royal. He basically a Democrat all his life, and then right at the end, he leans you over.
Yeah.
And the thing is the first thing
even the Republicans down there aren't happy that he just walked that guy in to qualify, because you got a lot of guys that have been waiting in line for a long time.
Well, yeah, I understand that. But from a Democratic perspective, here's the thing. Why didn't you have a candidate?
Well, actually, thanks to Karen Handel's unique interpretation of that Senate District 13 withdrawal and getting to have the special primary, it should be easier to at least have placeholders next time. Because in the past, if you're trying to find a placeholder candidate to at least, you know, park there, that person thinks like, oh, I got to go through with the whole primary and everything else.
But here's the thing, Chris. I'm not talking about placeholders. I'm talking about running somebody in every district. You do not have any open seat. You have somebody running against every incumbent. And you're going to get some whack jobs, and you're going to take some hits because there's going to be some crazy people.
I'd say just give the voters some damn choice. But people are tired of voting for one party.
All it takes is winning a House seat one time with lightning in a bottle, and that's how you develop a farm team. And until the Democratic Party of Georgia can't do that, or can do that,
well,
that's the first topic of conversation at any meeting, I think.
Well, let me mentioned Karen Handel a little bit earlier. And
yeah, let's talk about Karen.
Here we go.
I've
been trying to shift it there.
There we go.
In the news.
Let's talk Karen Handel.
You know, from on Tuesday threatening Starbucks with, you know, people for recent jail time to...
that was priceless.
You know, earlier she'd, you know, she was questioning voter registration, really focusing... The Democrats think on voters who might have been their core, some people who'd be voting for them. There was the battle to keep Powell off the PSC ballot.
Karen Handel gives a new meaning to the "you see a fight, jump in it." I mean, she has not missed any opportunity to make herself front and center in this particular election cycle.
No, she hadn't, and it's gonna hurt her in her bid for governor in 2010.
Well, I think Karen Handel looks at Georgia and says this is a Republican state, and the person who wins Republican primaries for races like governor and lieutenant governor wins, and how can I impress the 5% of the state that votes in a Republican primary? Honestly. I know you don't like that. You may not like to hear that, but
no,
it's the Catherine Harris model. The people that are paying attention are paying attention, and Catherine Harris ended up in Congress.
Hang on a second, Jason. Right. You know what? If you guys want to run her as Catherine Harris, she's a hell of a lot smarter, she's a hell of a lot better politician, and she's going to whip your ass every time. So you guys go with that overreach, and you're done.
I see this, and this is from the outside looking in. I mean, I like Karen. She's a nice person. I don't agree with everything she's done as Secretary of State. I think the Powell thing was a travesty. Let me just say this. The Democrats try to pin her as Catherine Harris, and if she does run in 2010, she's going to kick your guys' ass. Plain and simple. I mean...
I have a friend here.
I mean, I'm simply saying.
Oh, don't you hate to have that toy taken away from you, though, Chris?
Yeah, right.
It's a good one, boy. But you're right. It's she's
Captain
a
Harris
hell of a
strategy.
Lot smarter than that horrible.
She's made some bad political mistakes.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I have been one of people that have said, if you attack her on these bad political mistakes, absolutely, you're going to win some points there. But, man, if you get into this whole tinfoil hat, the Republicans are trying to screw us through the Secretary of State's office.
Well, it didn't go
anywhere.
I know
you're losing one vote here. I bet you're probably losing two.
Well, look, when you do an open records request, they don't respond after 3 months, and then you have to go to the Attorney General's office and threaten them to get a response.
Do you really think voters care about that, Chris?
No, but that is Catherine Harris-type behavior.
I guess.
I mean, you also think it's... I mean, I understand that... What is it? They're supposed to respond within 3 days. That's the rule.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay.
I mean, I understand... No. I mean, I understand...
Put that on the campaign side.
No. I'm not saying run with it. I'm simply saying it's the Secretary of State's office. They have a lot of other stuff
going on. So the new grift standard for Georgia politics is if you can get away with it, even if it's wrong, if nobody cares, you should just do it.
Are talking Georgia politics.
It is Georgia politics.
No, actually...
No, she's just testing... She's testing every limit she has in terms of the power of her position.
Actually, the standard is you have libertarian, the first time we've had a true libertarian at this podcast, say that what she did on the Powell case was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But you got to choose how you attack that.
And I will tell you now that Brandon Gibbons, a libertarian in that case, that race is endorsing Powell.
Right.
I don't know if I'm supposed to say that right now, but that is the case.
That's okay.
I mean, it's a matter of tactics, not strategy.
Well, I just think it's, I think it was idiotic for her to stand there on the floor in Minnesota at the convention and say, voter registration, it's a myth, y'all. And 600,000 new votes for Barack Obama in the state over John Kerry. Yeah,
shit,
it's a myth. Didn't happen.
The shit that wasn't going on and some of the other states wasn't going on with Acorn. And I agree some of that stuff's been blown out of proportion. But, I mean, if it wasn't going on, then you would have an argument. But the fact of the matter is, there is such a thing as voter fraud. I mean, it may not be as rampant as everybody says it is, but
she does have to follow the law.
Exactly.
And the Powell case is a perfect example of where politics and the law start to conflict. Now, if you want to attack her on the fact that she chose to take a very narrow view of the law and to help her party and it was politically motivated, with you there 100%. You want to start calling her Catherine Harris and start comparing the PSC 4th District to Bush Gore 2000?
At least she didn't make a big deal about Obama's birth certificate. Okay?
I would say, I think that she would pull everything she possibly could if it got down to a situation that large and that huge, where she could take the media spotlight.
If she could take the
media spotlight and use her position and abuse her position in any possible way, I think she would easily do that in a heartbeat. Give her the rope; she'll hang herself eventually.
Maybe I don't know what Catherine Harris actually did in Florida, but my definition of that is taking a very narrow reading of the law to do what they wanted to do for a partisan standpoint.
She did what the Republican operatives told her to do. She did exactly what they told her to do.
Karen Handel's looking at either a governor's race or a 14th congressional district in North Metro Atlanta.
I think this entire
election,
proved if you do what Republican operatives tell you to do, you're going to lose. I think she better be a little careful.
She was saved on election day by depressed turnout among Republicans. I think that really saved her, because
she just better watch it from here on out. Because I think if we could just see in a little bit, and it could go a lot further if she continues.
Offense to Spacey or Chris, but I just hear a lot of just empty threats. I mean, what does she need to watch? I mean, besides the Powell case, Congress really don't have much on her.
Nope.
I mean, the Powell case, holding on,
not unless you go into crazy land.
Well, she attempted to do that with the Starbucks thing. I think she'll teeter because she'll receive exactly like Catherine Harris did, bad advice, and she'll teeter on the edge until she falls off with the things like the Starbucks issues.
I do think that was kind of ridiculous.
It was over the top.
But that's not the Starbucks issue. You make her die the death of a thousand cuts on stupid crap like that.
But that's just a stupid thing. People are just going to look at it and laugh. It just makes her look bad.
I mean, if
it's not going to break the law.
Yeah. But I think just in little thing, and like I said, this is inside baseball. This is, you know, runners in scoring position type stuff. But, you know, carving out the special exemption for Republicans in Senate District 13 that nobody's ever carved out before, you know, ruling in three of four primary, actually in four primary.
Refusing to open on the weekend.
Yeah, She couldn't do that.
Well,
that's
funny,
true.
North
that's
Carolina
true.
Managed to make it happen.
Yeah, because they went to the Department of Justice like a month ago
if you
and
want to
said,
call a special
can
session
we
the
do
legislature
this?
And pay $250,000, you know, bring the legislature back for a session and allow them to do it, then fine.
You know what this argument's going to come down?
Because if she had done it, you guys would be raising holy hell.
You know what's going to, this argument's going to come down to, if the Democrats ever play this, the Republicans are going to come straight back with she was enforcing the law.
Well,
and the difference is Catherine Harris was batshit crazy and could be made fun of, and Karen Handel was not. So if the Republicans come back with she was just doing what the law says, you lose.
Well, I think we may have to agree to postpone the final verdict, but let's see.
she might get crazier.
Let's see next year. We've already got Eric Johnson saying that it looks like it's too easy to vote in Georgia now and wanting to restrict early voting, and I'm sure we'll have Democrats saying we should look at shifting early voting to go cover the weekend and that Monday, and we'll see which direction.
Yeah,
yeah.
At least the other discussion that I want to have tonight is about the Senate race, which is the big race that we'll be covering, and that is a case where the Libertarian candidate did make a difference. Whether it was because just a lot of people couldn't stomach voting for Saxby Chambliss, or because they really supported Alan Buckley, what did happen, and what's going to happen in the future?
I think one of the interesting things is you look at the percentages of the Libertarian vote, and you start down at the PSC race, and you start to move up. And the percentage gets smaller and smaller.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is that when Republicans are going to make a protest vote, the closer you get to the top, the more they stay home. And Buckley definitely pushed it over the top. And Mons, I think it was.
Mons got 33%.
Mons got a million votes.
Yeah, Mons was. He was unopposed. Or who was in the Powell race?
Brandon Gibbons.
Right, he got about 5%.
He got 5%. Buckley got about 3%, and then Barr got about 1%.
Yeah.
I was trying to be generous.
I understand. Right. Rounding.
But, the point, we did throw two races. We did throw two states to
The point is that I don't want to use the word important, but the closer you get to the top, the more they stay home. But Buckley did throw it into a runoff, just like it was in 92.
Oh, God.
I have no idea.
Chastain?
Yeah, maybe.
So mm-hmm. What's going to... So does anyone have any kind of feel for what's going to happen?
Well, Saxby's going to take it.
Yeah, I agree. Saxby's
People are simply not going to come
you
out
think
and
so?
Vote again.
No, I don't think
and
so.
Obama doesn't have time to show up here and, you know...
Runoff, it's
not going to happen.
Runoffs are too strange a beast to call. I mean, you get like...
You're just saying, okay, you can't predict it.
No, you can't predict it. I'm not calling it one way or the other. I'm saying you can't predict it. In a general election where we have a huge turnout like we just did, we got, what, 65% in Georgia, somewhere around there?
Probably high. Well, if you just look at active voters.
Yeah. Runoff, what are we going to get? 20?
I mean, in 92, actually, I ran these numbers earlier. In 92, we had about 56% of the total that showed up in November show up for the runoff in the 92 race.
Yeah, so 50% of 60, so like 30%.
When it gets low, though, if you think about it, you take all your supporters in one group and you take all the other supporters in the other, and if only 50% are coming out and you can make yours be 53 and the other side's 49,
right,
you can turn around.
Are any of the new
Obama voters
going to actually come out?
Oh, I seriously doubt it. Saxby has his hardcore base, and he will be able to. These are the kind of people who would show up in a runoff, I think.
They're all down in Destin drinking and depressed.
I saw an ad against Tim Martin by Saxby just before we came out here, and he's basically already got his runoff ads up, and it's, you know, Jim Martin wants to go to Washington so he can help Barack Obama raise taxes.
That might not be the best thing to say right now.
You know, I think that we're at an interesting crossroads in American politics, because you had all these, not just new voters, but also groups of voters that kind of never really thought that they actually had a stake in the process, and with Barack Obama getting elected, it's that we won, kind of, for once. So the question is, you know, with the Obama voters, do they come out in 2012 and that's the last time we see him ever again? Or do some of these voters look at what happened with the presidential election and say, like, well, we can actually swing this, you know, we can actually swing this stuff, so maybe we will be back. So it'll be an interesting race, I think.
I think if Obama comes here, I think a lot of his voters will turn out. I think it will be close if Obama comes here. I've heard today, I don't know if the source is that great, but I heard today that Obama's bringing his team from Florida and North Carolina to Georgia.
I've heard that's the case.
That was sort of the case throughout the whole election. He brought teams to Georgia, but he didn't bring himself.
Well, then again, I also thought it was interesting to hear that the DSCC hasn't completely taken over the Martin campaign, so maybe they're not.
I think that may be happening.
Okay.
The other thing I think is, if Jim Martin's name was Roy Barnes, Thurber Baker, Mark Taylor.
But that's the thing.
I think he would have just won outright. I mean, I think.
Why didn't Barnes run for that seat? Because you look at the race now. I mean, I know hindsight's 2020. I mean.
Because he's running for governor again.
Why didn't Tim Golden run for that seat, though? I mean, I think a lot of. You know, I think anybody that had some sort of. Yeah, Jim Marshall, or even Sanford Bishop. I know there was a blogger kind of storm out for him earlier on.
I think a lot of people didn't realize what it would look like in September and October for the Republicans.
The bailout would call everybody by surprise.
Yeah.
And that's what hurt Chambliss, because I had people calling me and emailing me saying,
definitely.
I'm a lifelong Republican, get me an Alan Buckley sign.
Yeah.
Definitely.
People do not like Chambliss, and it couldn't have happened to a nicer campaigner.
No, I completely agree. I completely agree. But
tagging on to what Jason said, I was down at the debates in Perry, and there were two moments of very uncomfortable side. I was actually sitting on the Republican side.
Well, any Perry debate is uncomfortable. If you're in the crowd.
The Perry debates were the only debate where they encouraged the audience to be riled up.
It was almost like a football game. Like, all the Democrats
were
up there, and all the Republicans
were
there. I happened to be sitting on the Republican side. And the two moments of very uncomfortable silence were the bailout and immigration. And both times, all the Republicans are just like, kind of squiggling in their seats.
The biggest thing, in that second debate on WSB, when he said, I opposed the president of immigration. I was just like, my mouth dropped to the floor. I mean, I was just, what?
I'll tell you what's really amazing about that race, too, is that I think Martin got a pretty big assist in a lot of ways from Buckley. And I know Buckley's public statements are that, you know, both of these guys would be terrible or whatever, but you can definitely tell that he you can definitely tell that he dislikes one candidate more than the other.
I think, and I don't think Alan's, I mean, you know, I'm not going to go into what Alan has told me privately, but, I mean, he thinks Jim's a nice guy.
Right.
Actually, Reason Magazine did a story on Alan, so I'm going to go ahead and just, I mean, since you put it out there, I mean, he doesn't like Travis. I mean,
yeah, he doesn't like Saxby.
I mean, and somebody told me from Creative Loathing the other day that they thought the best line of the campaign, the Senate campaign, was when Saxby turned to Alan and said, "I think you should have taken your pill or something like that." And Alan said, "You should have taken the whole bottle." They said that was the best line of the campaign. And yeah, I thought that was Alan.
Well,
Alan,
who gets
Alan ran as good of a race?
Who gets a chance? Wait a minute. Who gets a chance on television to tell a sitting senator, "Hey, you're a liar. You
need to take more pills."
I mean, he called him everything but a stupid old, F-tard. But and I thought he was going to do that at some point. Yeah. So I think he could definitely generate some media buzz in his attack on Chambliss during
that
debate.
He doesn't like he at first, I think he just disliked what Chambliss represented. But I think as it went on more and more, I think he saw that Saxby Chambliss is an arrogant prick.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And he helped set that up.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He just I think that the Chambliss you see in the debates is actually the real Saxby Chambliss. He's a liar.
He's arrogant.
He thinks no one can touch him.
Well, doesn't give a rat's ass
years,
about
his first 4 years in the Senate
populace.
Was playing golf.
Oh, he missed it. George so Bush cracks jokes about it when he brought W down here. I don't know how many times to Reynolds Plantation to help him sell lots for what's his name, Mercer Reynolds.
But with that said, I'm just not
really like they really like that last comment.
And W makes cracks about it.
Well, I think one of Saxby's problems is that he looked at the Republican model of how you get elected in Georgia, which is you win your first race, and you just don't make any waves.
And you play golf.
Yeah.
You
play golf.
And
which is a microcosm of the presidential election, too. Run the same old playbook until somebody comes in and changes the whole
but
game.
But he hasn't done it, because his last year, his last year in the Senate was his worst year.
Yeah.
I mean, you have the bailout, you have the immigration, well, the last 2 years.
Particularly fiscal conservatives.
Oh,
the ag bill.
The fiscal conservatives and Medicare. The fiscal conservatives hate him.
Oh, and I think part
but
of
the Club for Growth came out and endorsed him, and I just couldn't believe. I sat there and just shook my head for
him. We'll have a whole thing about me and you just talking about the Club for Growth.
I think part of Saxby's problem too is he tried to honestly be a little courageous in doing the immigration reform stuff.
Yeah, that's the big irony.
As soon as the base hollered, he just said, screw that. I'm not doing that
the
anymore.
The base hollered over the bailout.
That's so bizarre because he actually got out of the golf cart for once. And with whether it was immigration, whether it was Medicare, Medicaid, and or whether it was the bailout, he actually got out of the Beltway mentality and had Georgia on it in his sights.
But you know what's weird, Jason? Is that Saxby is in a runoff, and we can blame the bailout. Jim Marshall was absolutely one of the on the forefront of the bailout, mm-hmm. and won by the biggest percentage he's ever won mm-hmm. by.
He by a little bigger in 2004, but different.
Well, I think you also have to look.
Don't preach numbers at me, Hutman.
I'm
making rhetorical points.
We were talking about the demographics earlier. I think also the demographics of the 8th have changed a lot.
But that was really strange,
especially Newton County.
It stretches from Newton County to the Florida border.
Oh, does it?
Okay.
Almost, yeah. Colquitt.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah. My home county. So I thought that was very interesting that he absolutely was one of the.
But because he actually believed in his vote.
You know, I think people really bought that. I think because when I saw him down in Perry, it was
at least he was honest about it.
He was absolutely honest about it, and to be honest, he looked tired and beaten, and I thought he was going to lose hands down. But I think you're right, Joseph. I think people actually bought the "I did this on principle, and I'm willing to lose my seat for that."
He was very passionate when I heard.
No, well, and he was. And I, we talked about this earlier. I think off tape that Jim Marshall is one of the few guys in Georgia that legitimately has a reputation, kind of a public image, as a guy who's. Yeah, he happens to be a Democrat, and he's good on a lot of Democratic issues, and Democrats don't always disagree with him, but he definitely doesn't come across as the same type of partisan that,
He could run with either letter by his name.
Yeah, even you compare him even to John Maybe Lewis is a guy that everybody respects too, but John Lewis is much more of a Democrat. He's a partisan warrior, whereas Marshall's more of a ideological warrior that's independent of party.
Incredibly kind of pragmatic.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I still associate Marshall with FISA, though. That's all I really know of the guy being up here in, you know, in the fishbowl of Metro Atlanta. I don't know a whole lot about the 8th, but I just associate him very strongly with FISA.
I voted for Marshall before I voted for before he voted for the bailout. But if I got to do it over again, I just would have written someone in. But the only reason I voted for Marshall is just because Rick Goddard was just the worst candidate in any congressional seat in Georgia. It was horrible. But, I mean, that's just my two cents on that race.
Well, it's been a lot of inside baseball talk tonight, but if you're into that, it's been really interesting.
Yeah, and next week, expert help for your fantasy politics team.
But we need to wrap things up. I want to give a shout out to Manuals for allowing us to host this here, and also to Rusty and Amber of Georgia Podcast Network for letting us use their equipment. And I want to go around the table again really quick just for everyone's final thoughts. Start with Griff.
There's going to be a lot of soul searching in the Republican Party over the next 2 months, and it's time for the moderates to take a step up. The party has been hijacked, and it is time. Come forward.
Somewhat agree with that. I think that the fiscal conservatives need to retake the party and kick the social conservatives out, let them go to the Constitution Party or the church, whichever one they choose. I would say join me in the non-voters coalition for the runoff in the super second. I'm just not going to vote in the Senate race.
You're voting for Martin.
I'm not going to vote for
him. I'm going to twist your arm.
No.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, do it.
No, I'll play you.
I think Georgia, of course, we see everything through the prism or the lens of Republican politics. I see Newt Gingrich trying to make a third, fourth, fifth stand here and failing.
And but you know, my final parting thought would kind of be that the Democratic Party, in addition to just recruiting candidates, also needs to do a better job of telling Georgians why they need to vote for Democrats. Instead, it's just too hard for candidates, and I'm included in this, but it's just too hard for these candidates to go try to paint a narrative for the 3 months before the election when most Georgia voters aren't even aware that there are any controversies at the Capitol. So they have to do a better job of working the media and introducing their disagreements. And everybody knows about education cuts, but how about a new issue for the next 2 years to give our candidates something to run on next time?
Thanks to everyone on the panel for making it out here tonight. Thanks to everyone listening for downloading this. Hope you catch us next time on the Georgia Politics Podcast.